Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of Boat Briefing. My name is Stuart Campbell, Editor-in-Chief of Boat International, and here to help me navigate through all the news from the world of superyachting are Caroline White, Deputy Editor, and Charlotte Hogarth-Jones, Features Director. And it was Charlotte, actually, who also conducted this week's interview with a fascinating owner called Carolyn Aronson, and you'll hear more about that very shortly. But first, let me start by wishing the very best of luck to our columnist Sir Ben Ainslie and Ineos Team UK as they kick off the Prada Cup final against Italian team Luna Rossa this weekend in the America's Cup. So there will be 13 races between these teams up to the 22nd of February, by which time we will know which of these two will go on to face Emirates Team New Zealand in the America's Cup match. And that's the kind of the final event in this seemingly never-ending America's Cup competition. It seems to go on for a long time, but it's thrilling all the same. So in the Prada Cup final is Luna Rossa and Ineos Team UK. And the winner of the America's Cup match, of course, will be flying home with the old mug. Will it be the Brits, the Kiwis, or the Italians? We'll know soon. So our March issue, which is out this week, actually has our latest column from Sir Ben in it. So here's a story about the perils of monthly deadlines in publishing. In the column, Ben is lamenting somewhat his team's pretty ordinary performance in the America's Cup World Series, in which they lost every single race, six on the trot. That series concluded on the 19th of December, so he filed his column after that, but before the Prada Cup round robins, in which Ineos Team UK won every single race, giving them automatic qualification to the Prada Cup final. So anyway, if you want a snapshot of the team's state of mind after being absolutely smashed by everyone, don't miss this column. He even had to tell his team to stop reading the press because they were getting such a pasting. But it obviously spurred them on because they absolutely dominated thereafter. And that's in the March issue. And we'll catch up with Ben after the whole show is over. Fingers crossed he's coming home with the cup.
It's also worth noting that whatever happens in the cup final, Ben will be writing us a column for the June issue of Boat International, so do keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, definitely do. And we've also updated the story on our website, everything you need to know about the America's Cup, because I know to the casual observer, it can seem like a kind of a Byzantine competition with a million kind of qualifying rounds and who knows how points are distributed, et cetera, et cetera. But I suppose at this point, read the story. But the big news is the Prada Cup final on now determines which team, either Luna Rossa or Ineos Team UK, goes on to face Emirates Team New Zealand in the final of finals, and which determines the ultimate outcome of the America's Cup. Very exciting. So a few other things in the March issue, an exclusive story on the gorgeous turquoise Explorer Blue 2, I think one of my favorite boats ever. A great story about the future of onboard medical care, the potential of autonomous yachts, that's a really interesting feature too, written by Marilyn Moore about the future of AI on super yachts. And it's also our ultimate toys special. So for you gadget fans, there is lots of stuff in there for you and plenty of cool new kit and some really cool new tenders as well. So definitely check out that. Grab it today. It's a fantastic issue.
Actually, before the physical copy lands on your doormat or on your yacht, I thought I'd mention that our new virtual boat show is live. Obviously, I'm biased. I think it's very beautiful and wonderful. But you can check it out now via our main website, boatinternational.com, and you'll find a whole load of articles all dedicated to the excitement that comes with owning and chartering a beautiful boat. There are kind of themes every month, and this theme is the thrill of yachting. So there's some really exciting pieces and some great yachts to look at if you're shopping too. Everyone has an online shopping addiction at the moment, being stuck at home. Why not buy a boat? Anyway, some of the pieces I thought were interesting. There's one about the adventures of the Berger Explorer, Northland, which has recently been cruising the South Pacific and is now planning on heading up to Scandinavia. That's a great read. And there's also a feature about designing the perfect boat for the Northwest Passage and exploring in some of the world's dodgier places. So if that's something you've got in mind, go and check it out.
So you mentioned online shopping, and I know I keep banging on about it in this podcast, but there's another story we've just put on the website this week about the record-breaking brokerage sales in 2020 and how December was the second best month for brokerage sales since we started collecting records in 2009. So the only better month in the last decade or decade and a bit was May 2017, in which 59 yachts were sold. And there was another month with 57 sales. So December 2020 equaled the second best month for brokerage sales on record. Anyway, that story's online now. And yeah, online shopping, because a lot of these boats are being sold sight unseen because people just can't get to them. So, which is a phenomenon that the brokerage market is has become very familiar with very, very quickly. So virtual tours and all that kind of stuff. They're selling boats sight unseen, which is amazing, really. But yeah, boats flying off the shelves.
You've become a bit like the sort of the Rain Man of yacht sales. You can remember, you just reel off all these statistics. That, if you're listening to this, you might imagine that Stuart has it all written down. He really doesn't. He's just obsessed by the data.
I wish I could count cards.
Well, someone else who is shopping for boats at the moment is actually Carolyn Aronson, the interviewer on this week's podcast. She's a really interesting lady. So if you've probably seen her products, she's the founder of a huge hair care company called It's a 10. And her husband is the CEO of Titan FC. So they're kind of this incredible power couple. And it was interesting chatting to her because her boat, called She's a 10, in line with the brand, she had never chartered before, never owned before, was kind of looking around and literally walked on board, made a cash offer. So she kind of came to it completely out of nowhere, really. And now when we spoke, she was just about to give birth to her fifth child. She didn't give birth to them all, but she's got big family. So now she's kind of looking to upgrade and get something bigger. But speaking to her, talking about the boat, and you'll hear her later on, it did make me realise, I wonder if there's a kind of nostalgia, a bit like buying your first car to your first boat, because, you know, she was telling all about all the things she absolutely loves about it and how she's hoping to find all the same features in another boat. But I think it will be bittersweet selling it for her, because it's clearly her kind of, you know, first special boat. And I don't know if getting something, she quite wisely pointed out, getting something newer and bigger doesn't necessarily mean better, and it seems like she's already got everything that she wanted in this one boat. But on that note, we've actually got another feature in the works to do with yachts that some of the world's greatest yacht designers own themselves. So I think that's really interesting. There are people like Andrew Winch, he has a sailboat, a Jano, and a couple of others. Greg Marshall in the States has two classics with really great stories, apparently. Sam Sorgiovanni has a Nivarania, and he had another boat before that. And I think Pascal Raymond's in there. We've interviewed about seven or eight different designers in total. But I think it's so revealing to see what these guys choose to spend their precious time on, because basically, in theory, they know boats better than anyone else. So it's quite interesting to see, you know, if they could pick whatever they wanted, what they go for.
So whose choices have surprised you?
Well, I don't want to spoil it for you, because I think half the fun is in being surprised and seeing what people have got. But I have to say, we were really spoilt for options. You know, we could have made this feature 20 pages long, because there was, you know, almost every designer has got some kind of really fascinating little boat tucked away somewhere. So there's no shortage of people to write about, for sure.
Yeah, it's interesting that, isn't it? I remember I did a long interview with Dan Leonard and Carlo Nuvolari a few years ago. And Dan made the point in the feature that all yacht designers should know how to sail, because you don't get car designers who don't drive cars. So all yacht designers, if you're a specialist in this market, you should know exactly what you're dealing with, and you should know how to take a boat out. But not all do, of course. So I love it when yacht designers also demonstrate a love of the subject matter by getting on the water in their private time as well. And I love Andrew Winch's boat. That's Jeno 64. So they've sold, Jeno has sold so many. I can't remember the exact figure. See, I'm not Rain Man, because I can't remember the...
You're putting it on now. Figure. I bet you can.
I think I, the last I heard, I think it was in the 70s. I think they'd sold 70-odd hulls, but it's probably more of this Jeno 64. So it's Philip Briand did the naval architecture, and Andrew Winch worked on the interior and the layout. And it's such a successful model. That's the boat I dream about. So on occasion, when I'm sitting there wistfully dreaming about what boat I'm going to buy, the Jeno 64 is pretty much always top of my list.
It's very modest of you. I kind of imagine a 70-meter motor yacht with a vast crew and a spa.
Do you? Well,
I'm just trying to be realistic.
I always dream about a J class, like modest for me, just something that hemorrhages money and is a moment in history. Just something, you know, something small and unique.
Yeah, that's very classy of you.
It is. Thanks a lot, Karen.
I can imagine a bigger nightmare than owning a big classic boat, like a J-class.
Well, we're dreaming. I'd have a whole team of people to look after it for me, and I'd just say, don't bother me with any of the details. Do what you need to do, and see you in the summer.
I see you in St. Bart's.
Yeah, exactly. Just right. I wouldn't be getting bogged down in the invoices, Stuart. It's the fantasy.
Fair enough.
Well, you can all come to a party on my yacht when you find that both of your yachts are far too small.
I like how much you've thought about this, Caroline. You've actually thought about the logistics of it as well. Great.
Absolutely.
Actually, I'm blown away by Caroline Adder, winding it back a little bit. Five kids. I've got four and it's a nightmare. So she's got five.
They are in the teenage stages as well. I think apart from this new one, they're all between 13 and 21, I think she said. So four teenagers, pretty much. And she was incredibly glamorous, as you might expect for someone who owns, you know, she also owns a hair extensions line and a makeup line. But it was at the end of the day here and early in the morning there. And definitely one of us was looking a lot more presentable than the other. And it was her.
That'll also be going into the magazine.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, brilliant. So, yeah, so definitely stay tuned for Charlotte's interview with Caroline. And I just love seeing more women owners in the magazine represented in the podcast. It's only good. Alrighty, Caroline, walk us through the news.
So Dynamique has launched the first hull in its GTT 135 series Stefania, which sports a really striking golden hull. That, combined with her reverse bow, means that she's really something to look at, and I would recommend having a peek at the images on our website. The 41-metre aluminium yacht features exterior design by Dobrozhedov, while Van Usenen Naval Architects designed the fast displacement hull. Over in the Netherlands, the first AMEL 60 has arrived at Damen Yachting to begin outfitting. The 60-metre yacht, which is the first of three Espinoino-designed AMEL 60s under construction, is due for delivery in spring 2022. She will feature a metallic pebble grey hull with a Matterhorn white and jet black superstructure, according to the yard. So it sounds
jet
very
black
striking.
Superstructure. Yeah, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be very monochrome and cool, I think.
Yeah.
So in good news for the environment, the Austrian eco-catamaran specialist Silent Yachts has sold the first three hulls in its 24-metre flagship series Silent 80. The sales include both open and closed versions of the yacht, which is available either with a sky lounge on top or a huge 90-square-metre fly deck.
I also saw the story. I just want to flag this as well about the plastic eating catamaran called Banta. This is on the website as well. So it's a 56 meter yacht that can scoop up and process ocean plastics floating up to a meter below the surface at a rate of 1 to 3 tons per hour. So the organizations behind Manta are looking for a shipyard now, and they think if they can find one in good time, the boat can be launched in 2024. So this will basically sail around the oceans, scooping up plastic, cleaning the oceans as it goes, which is a great initiative.
What does she look like, Stu? Have you seen any pictures or concept drawings?
There's some renderings on the site. She looks necessarily industrial.
Yeah, obviously. That's what I was wondering. I think still waiting for the sort of amazing eco yacht that actually doesn't make you kind of wince a bit when you see the design of it.
Yeah, I don't think aesthetics wasn't top of the list for these guys. It was functionality. And some of the stuff on board is very impressive. So really, fingers crossed they build it.
Mm.
You never know. Also, some of the tech from that boat might filter down and end up on more yachts. So perhaps that we'll end up with something you can stick on a more classic yacht and it'll eat ocean rubbish, which I'm sure lots of owners would be keen on.
Well, there's a piece on the website at the moment by Oliver Stees, the guy behind Necton, this incredible ocean exploration agency. And he wrote a piece all about things you can kind of add on to your current yacht to help with research. And there's a lot more out there than you think. Some of it's very unobtrusive, kind of little things that you attach to the boat, some water sample and things. And they're tiny. They're not ugly things.
That's key. You can be a lazy environmentalist, can't you? You don't have to spend tons of money or go out of your way. You just bolt something onto your boat and you're basically contributing to ocean science, which is great. And then you can just like tick conscience ease.
So in our final story of the week, we're about to talk about successful series. So this seemed an appropriate segue. Benetti has launched the ninth hull in its Mediterranean 116 series, which is being christened Sunrise. The first hull in the series, Oli, was launched back in 2016. So nine hulls is not bad going for a 35-metre design.
I remember Oli, yeah. She was a World Super Yacht Awards nominee not so long ago. If you look at the global order book, series production, bigger series production is a growing trend, and there's fewer and fewer full custom boats being built every year and more of these semi-custom boats being built every year. So obviously reflecting a more impatient owner class. People want their boats sooner and they don't mind that they look a little similar to the one a few moorings down in the marina. That doesn't seem to bother owners anymore. But yeah, tell us more about new models and what's going on in the world.
Well, yes, everybody likes new things. So we thought we'd touch on this subject this week. According to our latest global order book, 35 new series were announced between September 2019 and September 2020. That's slightly down from 40 in the same period the previous year, but part of an overall upwards trend, which started in about 2013. I should also note that we're talking here about when new series were announced, not when the first hull went into production. So perhaps talking about this is more indicative of general market trends and appetites than the directly about the health of the market. Interestingly, the latest period showed more new 30 to 40 meter series than any period we looked at going right back to 2012. There were 16 new series announced in this category compared to 12 the year before. The number of new series announcements in the 50 to 70 meter category was also good at 4, which I know doesn't sound very dramatic, but it's at the higher end of the scale for that size bracket. Those new series were the 52-metre Westport 172, which is a slightly larger version of their established 50-metre series with updated exterior styling and tech. The Darman Sea Explorer 55, which is now under construction as the Sea Explorer 58. That's a new size for their extremely successful ice-class Explorer design, the Sea Explorer. The San Lorenzo 60 Steel. Well, we have no details yet, except that the first one is sold with delivery slated for 2024. And finally, the Baglietto 52M, which is a new addition to the yard's T-line. It features an open stern, a three-level beach club, and a large pool. As that suggests a little, we've only got two Italian series there. Italy always announces the most new series, and they maintained that place in the 2021 Global Order Book with 15 new series compared to 16 the previous year. Their closest rivals were the Netherlands and Taiwan with 4 each. So that's a long way. Turkey and the UK come in next with 3 new series each. Looking at the most successful new series, we have to mention Westport 112 with over 60 hulls built, a couple of them to be delivered this year.
I believe it's 63.
Oh, confirming Charlotte's theory. So looking to the future, we've got some great new series to look forward to this year. There's the Azimut Grande Tri-Deck, the new Azimut flagship and the first Tri-Deck from the brand. And the first hull is already launched. There's also the Azimut Magellano 30 Metri, the new flagship of the series. Those Magellanos are really beautiful, slightly retro looking boats. And the 30 meter is scheduled for the end of this year. We ran a feature on the 25 meter version in the 2020 December issue of Boat International, if you want to take a look at that. We'll also see the Ferretti 1000, the new flagship of Ferretti yachts and the first Ferretti above 30 meters. Delivery of the first hull is expected in spring summer this year. Sunseeker in the UK will present 2 new designs, the 90 Ocean, of which the first hull is ready for delivery, and the 100 yacht. From Benetti, we can look forward to the first of their 1960s-inspired Moto Panfilo yachts and their first Explorer, the 37-metre Beyond. So, I mean, there are plenty more to look forward to this year. We're hardly scratching the surface, but we haven't got all day.
Thanks, Caroline. Some fantastic new series, new model series coming out this year. And just to wind back to the Westport 112 again quickly, so I think it's 63, and there's a feature written on the Virtual Boat Show now actually about how Westport designed such a successful boat, and we've even called it, maybe even slightly hyperbolically, the most successful super yacht of all time. It might actually be the most successful series of a boat that size of all time. I'd have to look at the stats, but it's a brilliant feature just digging back into the history of the model and why it's such a success. So that brings us to the end of this week's news section. Hope you enjoyed that. Stay tuned for Charlotte's interview with Carolyn Aronson.
So I'm joined today by the owner of She's a 10, Carolyn Aronson. You've probably heard of her already, but if you haven't, Carolyn is the business brain behind It's a 10, a hugely successful hair care line that you'll find literally everywhere in the States, from chain hair salons such as Regis and those at JCPenney to over 25,000 independents. And you might even have seen her ads on the primetime slots during the Super Bowl. She's also recently launched her own makeup line, Be a 10 Cosmetics, and her own hair extensions brand, Extensions. So for someone who gets as excited about hair and makeup as I do, interviewing her is a real privilege, and I'm very excited. But I'm sure those of you who are listening will be just as interested in, not more so, in the fact she also owns a pretty awesome yacht. She's called She's a 10, so some good consistency there. Carolyn, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Charlotte. I appreciate it.
And where in the world are you today? It looks lovely and sunny.
It is. I'm actually in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, in Harbor Beach area, which is really considered one of the yachting capitals of the world. So I'm fortunate enough to live here.
Fantastic. And we should say as well, just before we get cracking, that Carolyn is shortly due to give birth to her fifth child. So obviously, if you feel any labor pains, flag up your hand. We don't want the first boat briefing baby to come into life on the show.
Absolutely. And I was fortunate enough not to have to birth them all. We do have a blended family, but we are super excited about our fifth child. So thank you.
Okay, so let's start at the very beginning. Before we get on to yachting, can you tell me a bit more about your childhood and where you grew up? Was Fort Lauderdale always home for you, or how did life begin?
Yeah, no, I actually grew up in Michigan and had a lot of water experiences on the lakes, the beautiful lakes around Michigan. But my parents were New Yorkers and I was born in Jersey. So we would rent a house on the shore, on the ocean for a month at a time during the summers. And I really just fell in love with the ocean. A lot of my boating experience though was smaller boats, skiing on the lakes. But I dove headfirst into the yachting world.
And what were you like as a child? Kind of how would people describe your personality? And are you still the same today, or have you changed, do you think?
Yeah, you know what? I think overall, I was probably a pretty shy child. I was really? Adopted. So my first few years, I think I probably was a little scared, a little leery. Mm-hmm. From there, I think I blossomed as I got older.
And what about your sort of business background? So you've obviously achieved this enormous business success. Were your parents very hard workers? Did they have kind of business in their blood, or were you a bit of a kind of black sheep of the family?
You know, I actually grew up with three older brothers, and my father was a Ford executive. So he really worked his way up through the ranks over the years with Ford Motor Company, became a high level executive. He was manager of labor relations for all of Ford Motor Company. And my mother actually had graduated from Columbia University, but when she started having children, became, you know, a stay at home mother for the four of us, but really was a very brilliant woman.
And so you mentioned a bit about yachting, kind of you were doing sort of stuff on the lakes and things like that. So then how did you come into actually owning a yacht?
You know, it's really interesting. As I became more successful, I mean, the ocean has always been my solace anyway.
Is it very much downtime for you? Do you take clients out on the water, or is it kind of sacred private time?
Yeah, it's one of the few ways that I actually kind of decompress. And when I'm floating, I'm my happiest. And I love to obviously do it with my loved ones and my family and share it with people. So my mother, being the brilliant woman she was, really studied a tremendous amount of oceanography.
Really?
So we actually went on expeditions all over the world, oceanography based. So the ocean has absolutely always been a real passion and love of mine, having grown up with this special education behind me of it. And so when I actually became successful and had the opportunity to really have a house on the ocean, I just dove in head first, and I had never done it before. I never had really even been around family members or anyone that had yachts on this level. So the very first yacht I ever bought was a 50 meter. And I really just jumped in head first. And 6 years later, I still own it.
You went straight into ownership. You didn't charter beforehand?
Nothing.
Wow. That's ballsy.
Oh yeah. Like, and I probably broke all the rules along the way.
Yeah, for sure. So tell me a bit about her then. How did you find her? Did you kind of know what you had in mind, or did you just kind of, I don't know, what was the story there?
It's interesting because I moved to Fort Lauderdale and I really wanted the opportunity to own a yacht or at least a nice boat. So I started looking 80 feet, 100 feet, something that would maybe fit in the back of my yard.
Yeah.
I did not expect to actually end up with a 50 meter. I kind of stumbled upon it. I had been looking at boats for over 2 years and really kind of had a feel. I love interior design. I love remodeling. I love redoing anyway. So I knew, one, I needed a fixer upper in order.
Yeah,
to
so you were looking for a project then.
Yeah, I was looking for a project and I stumbled into it through, actually it was a friend of a friend that saw it was for sale. I walked on it and I made a cash offer. I just
really
great bones. It's a very unique boat. I love the fact that it's quite fast considering it's a 50 meter. It goes up to 30 knots. It has jet engines. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was interesting because the fashion designer, Ellen Tracy's husband, actually owned it. So
right.
I like the fact that, you know, a woman had been involved in it before and I just knew it could be a good project for me.
And were you looking for that make of boat particularly, or was just that one that kind of struck a chord?
It was that particular one. And through the years of owning it, I really educated myself on exactly, you know, what kind of MTUs it has, what kind of power it has. It has 172,000 pounds of thrust, which is actually as much as a 757 airplane. I mean, I've just really educated myself on what the inner workings of owning a boat like this means, which is very unique. I mean, it has a draft of like 5.5 feet. It's just an extremely unique type of a boat. And the fact when I get on it and we really, you know, hit it full throttle, I literally jones. I mean, I just get so thrilled how she cuts through the ocean. It is incredible.
And so was the transaction as simple as here's my cash offer, okay, I'll take it, done? Or was there quite a kind of long process before you actually acquired her?
You know, it actually was pretty quick. Mm-hmm. You know, the gentleman who had it already had another boat. So he was really looking to move on from it. So it went quite smoothly, went quite quick. You know, I broke all the rules. I probably didn't investigate it enough, but I got it at a decent enough price where I knew that I'd be putting money into it and I was willing to do that.
And what was your family's reaction? Were they all kind of for it, or did people turn around and say, what the hell, you just bought a boat? Like, what was the response there?
I call it a boat too.
And yeah, a yacht.
And so, yeah, you know, I think I definitely surprised a lot of people because like it was go big or go home. So, yeah, I think it was exciting for them. Everyone couldn't wait to go on it. But I'm sure they thought, what is she really getting herself into?
And you said you wanted to make your mark on it. Can you kind of talk me through what changes you made on board? Was it all kind of interior, or was some of it more major?
Yeah. The first thing I did, which was interesting, is I changed the name, which is a little bit of a no-no.
Yeah.
And Mystique had been a very well-known boat. It was a classic Australian-built boat. It had amazing lines to it and amazing features about it. And I kind of came in and I gave it a bit of pop. I put these neon signs on it, chrome neon signs. And she's a 10. I changed some of ended up repainting it eventually to a little bit more of an it's a 10 blue. It was a little more navy before. I added some lights to the top so that when you actually play music, the lights go and they change colors. And of course, one of the biggest things that I did is I added a Puerto Rican owner's flag. So not only am I a woman owned, you know, vessel, but I am a Hispanic woman owned vessel.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a whole lot of them out there. So between my music popping, my flag, my name change and making the blue even brighter, I think people see me coming. And and then on the inside, I completely really remodeled the inside.
Mm-hmm.
I used a lot of Jonathan Adler, which he's an amazing designer. And you know, the boat was built in the early 90s, late 80s. So it has beautiful lines and architecture about it. And so I really brought in the lucites, the gold, some of the cool things that were around back then. You know, that really made a big difference to it, helped transition it.
And was there anything about boat ownership that surprised you or that was sort of not how you expected it to be?
Oh my goodness, where do I begin? I think every bit of it. Really? You know, it's not an easy industry.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of very ancient maritime laws that you have to adhere to. There's a tremendous amount of Coast Guard and regulation that you have to make sure that you obviously have a very good captain that, you know, is going to make sure you're well protected throughout that process. And, you know, there's a reason there's a TV show called Below Deck. So I've lived a little bit of that reality.
Really, a bit of drama on board with crew. On board,
you know, the crew sometimes definitely gives you, you know, a little bit of that drama. And, you know, they're always kind of moving. They're international. They're always on these adventures and you end up being a part of them.
Yeah.
But you know what? It amazingly enough, none of it has deterred me. There's nothing better in life, and it's a very, very expensive venture. I always say I'm a pauper in the yachting. And yet I wouldn't trade it for anything, because just those moments, those memories you make, the experiences you have when you're yachting is just, there's nothing like it.
And so what are some of, you know, what does a day on the boat look like for you, your kind of perfect day? And what are some of the most memorable moments where you can look back on and say, God, I'm so glad we, you know, did that trip to X, Y, and Z, or I'll never forget this moment. What will you kind of take away from it?
Yeah, you know, besides obviously having my immediate family, the kids, my husband and I mm-hmm. on it, fishing, you know, just having our adventures on it. I think some of the most memorable moments, actually it was more when I was single, was having all my girlfriends on it. And we would
That sounds like a riot.
Oh my gosh, so much fun. We would go down to the Exumas and we would literally island hop. And one adventure from the next, you know, from swimming with the sharks to swimming with the pigs to going to all these different islands and just having the time of our lives and sharing those types of memories with my dear friends they still talk about it. You know, it was 4 years ago and they're like, where can we go again? You know, we're all tired of COVID. We need to go.
COVID has made people even more keen to charter and get away on boats than sort of ever before. But yes. I read that you were sort of looking to sell yours. Why is that? And do you have another boat in mind, or do you feel like it's kind of naturally coming to a close?
You know what? I absolutely would like to get another boat. You know, that's part of the problem is when once you have one, you always, you know, want to go a little bigger.
Yeah, absolutely.
And like I said, I've had her for 6 years now. She is gorgeous. And I literally have poured a ton of money into her and have taken immaculate care of her. And it's time for me to pass the torch. And and for, you know, especially now my family's expanding. But really, truthfully, it gets addictive. You just want to go a little bigger.
So is that what you have your eye on then? Like something the same, but slightly more family size?
A little.
and would you go for kind of same designer, same kind of boat, or do you think no, it's time
no,
for something
different? That's another reason I really would like to go over to Met and, like, you know, actually be able to, you know, this particular boat I could ship over, obviously it would be great over there, but I certainly wouldn't mind one with a little deeper draft, one where I can actually, you know, maybe I'm getting to the point where I could spend a month on it. You know, I mean, 6 years ago, I was building my empire, and I still am, don't get me wrong. But I've never really been able to spend a ton of time. I have to do quick little in and out trips, things like that a week. I would like to get a boat that really can withstand deep seas, can really travel the world, and where I could actually work from it for, you know, maybe a month or two.
I was going to ask you, it's interesting you were saying your mum had kind of brought you up with this appreciation of the ocean and that kind of sort of science perspective to things. Is that something you do with your own kids? And can you imagine yourself kind of literally, you know, forming a little bubble on board, doing school lessons on the boat, working from the boat, making it more of a kind of home, really?
I would love to, you know, even if it's only for a short period of time, because I think those experiences for the children and the ones we've been able to have with the ocean because of this beautiful vessel have been incredible. You know, everything from snorkeling in beautiful places and swimming with exotic, you know, creatures of the ocean. I mean, those are forever memories, and it really opens their mind to the world. So yes, I would love to do more of that.
And do you think it will be a bit bittersweet when you sell her, you know, thinking of all these memories? Are there things that you think, oh, I want to do this one more time before she goes, or how you'll actually feel when you get the offer?
I will. I'm gonna soak up using her, you know, until I actually, you know, do end up selling her. But yeah, no, it definitely will be bittersweet. She, like I said, she has so many amazing attributes to her that sometimes those things are just irreplaceable. Switching them to something, you know, bigger or newer doesn't always mean better. That's one thing I've learned about yachting. So the unique things that she offers, I definitely will miss. And especially one of the factors of speed, you know, granted, I don't look at the propane bill, but it is great to be able to be down into the Bahamas in 5 or 6 hours when my schedule doesn't allow me to sit there and take 3 days to drive somewhere. So things like that, you know, I really, I will miss that aspect. I'll have to putt along like everyone else.
You mentioned speed a couple of times. Are you a bit of a kind of adrenaline junkie? Are you also kind of sports cars, other stuff?
Yeah, I think the three older brothers rubbed off.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a three-wheel motorcycle. I just got a 1967 Corvette with a 650 horsepower engine in it. I mean, I'm definitely kind of like a guy with his toys.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I definitely love all that. And I love adventures. I mean, I hang glided off of mountains. And I just, yeah, I love it.
In the kind of business sense of things, are you one of those sort of entrepreneurial types who's kind of constantly working, workaholic, never really, you know, even when you're on the boat, you've got a laptop open? Or are you kind of, you have your work time and you have your private time and they're two separate things?
You know, I do try to differentiate, especially because I have children, you know, making sure that they get their attention and they're undivided. You know, what they need is really my number one. There were probably times in the beginning, I definitely was more 24/7. I'm learning to balance it more. But I'm a very high energy person.
Yeah.
And so I take advantage of all my 24 hours. And when the kids are either in bed or they're, you know, doing their thing, I get down to it and bang out what I've got to bang out. So
yeah.
Sometimes it can be 2 or 3 in the morning, but that's okay.
And are you juggling the kind of homeschooling kids at home type thing at the moment, like we are in the UK?
Yeah, you know what? It's interesting because we actually have a blend. We have children that are aged 20 all the way to 13 currently.
Right.
So our 20-year-old actually.
So you have all the teenagers.
Yeah.
It sounds like a terrifying period of time.
Yeah, it actually, and then we're adding a new board on it. Just a little icing on the cake, right?
Yeah.
We just moved our 20-year-old up to college. She resumed in person at Berklee School of Music in Boston. We're really excited for her with that, to get back to a little bit of normalcy. Our two middle sons are homeschooling on their laptops every day. I wish they were going in person, but that's what they choose. So, and then our 13-year-old is actually in person and has been since October. So, we have a blend of it all. I think, truthfully, the in-person is the best. So I pray that our world, gets back or finds a way to get these children back to school as soon as possible.
Yeah, completely. I think there's lots of people hoping the same thing, going yeah. slightly crazy in the interim. But let's talk a bit about your business, because I found it interesting sort of reading about, you know, you're developing this hair care line, and that was your kind of first business venture before the other lines followed, and you started off in a working in a hair salon. What did you always want to have a big business, and then hair was just the gateway into that, or was it frustration from not being able to get the products you wanted to do your current job really well, and it kind of snowballed from that?
A little bit more of the latter, definitely. Mm-hmm. You know, I was fortunate enough at 8 years old to declare I wanted to be a hairdresser, at 16 years old to declare I wanted to be a salon owner. So, you know, I've been in the beauty industry for 36 years. I stood behind the chair for almost 20 years, actually doing hair, and I owned a salon for a few years as well. Mm-hmm. So I've really kind of worn many hats. And during that time, like you said, a lot of frustration with products behind the chair. Why don't they do what they say? Why do they only do one thing? Why aren't they better? Why aren't mm-hmm. they all tested? So when I migrated into hair product manufacturing, which I had never done that before, although obviously I had some big business background, I did go to college at night. I was going for a BBA, didn't end up fully graduating, but I got a lot of great background: accounting, marketing, business law, economics. Mm-hmm. So those helped me with my foundation of owning my salon as well as my business today. That and a father who really taught me a lot about business. But ultimately, It was the frustration of why can't we do better? How do we raise the bar? So that was really what I strived for when I started making lines, and my first company completely failed.
Yeah.
So I learned a lot from that and was eager to move on to try it again and just dive in head first. So I've always had an entrepreneurial spirit, and it just kind of migrated over the years into hair product manufacturing. And now a head to toe, it's a 10 experience. So we have a lot of different brands really raising the bar in each and every category.
And you've really kind of, you know, doing my research on the brand, you've really cracked the mass market, which I know is something that so many people try to do. You know, you mentioned your first business didn't quite get off the ground, but I know so many people that have started out with kind of small businesses and just failed to roll it out on such a big scale. So why do you think you're successful there? What do you think that you do that maybe other people don't do?
You know, it's interesting because, I mean, I'm almost 16 years into this, so it certainly doesn't happen overnight. And I think what I did is, having all of my years in experience within the beauty industry, I understood the balance of it. Mm-hmm. And I understood that you have to, you know, crawl and then walk and then run. And that's literally what we did. We really started, we're a self-funded company. We started with out all the big bucks, the marketing budget behind it. We got the product in hairdressers' hands. It took off from there, and it just really snowballed. And so over the years, the organic passion of the brand itself led for the desire. And that desire really just kind of moved into more and more, you know, expansion and growth. So a lot of it's been extremely organic, but very, very balanced, because you can easily overextend yourself if you try to do it too quickly.
And do you think with your, so you've obviously opened a number of different lines, can you ever see yourself doing something completely out there and thinking, oh, now I'm gonna, you know, go into boat interiors or go into this? Or do you think, no, I know what I know and I'm not interested in other areas?
Oh no, I always love to try new things. Yeah. So I'm already working on, as a matter of fact, we're making Tiny 10, a kid's line. So
right.
I think that, and I've expanded, and I've expanded in outside of the beauty industry as well. We recently opened It's a 10 Records, which is a music label. So yeah. So, I mean, there's no, you know, I'm a serial entrepreneur. Addicted. I'm addicted to the game. So I love to try new businesses. I love to expand and grow. And I don't see myself stopping.
And as a very successful female CEO, you know, we read a lot about the glass ceiling in business and a sort of lack of women in very influential leadership positions at the top. How do you feel about that? Is that something you've encountered, or do you think really if you've got the drive to launch a successful business, there's nothing really stopping you?
You know, I certainly have encountered it, especially in the beauty industry. You would think that there were a lot of women in it, and it's mainly run by men. So I am proud to be a female within this industry, especially it's really consumed by females. So, and I hope I do inspire other women to go for it and to achieve no matter what it is that they think they can be successful at. And I think that sharing my story, helping others understand how I got here and how I had to learn and get through some of the over the humps to actually get through the tough times and inspire them to try to do the same, because it isn't easy, or everyone would do it. And especially I think for women, it's getting easier. Thank goodness. I am seeing more and more female CEOs around the world every year. And I think that that's absolutely fabulous. But you certainly can't go into it with a perspective of fear. Mm-hmm. You almost have to have an oblivion to fear. Yeah. And I think I kind of had that, you know, and that really helped me overcome a lot of the obstacles that I encountered.
And how about your reception into the yachting sort of yachting society, I guess, you know, sort of coming into it, having not chartered, you just come from nowhere and bought this big boat. How do you feel you were sort of accepted by other owners?
Yeah, I don't think I really probably was.
Really?
yeah. And I never really like joined the yachting world, you know,
right.
And that's okay. And so I think it definitely, I think there were moments when I was tested, to say the least.
Really?
And I don't know if it was because I was a female owner. I don't know if it was because I came in breaking the rules. It probably was. Maybe I brought it on myself. But nevertheless, you know, I never let it deter me. And the obstacles I've been able to overcome thus far, I've learned a lot from it, just like I do in business. We do occasionally charter. She's a 10. So you know, I've turned it into a business. So, you know, that's all good too.
And what's your favorite part of the boat? If you're sort of, like you say, you're going to be sad to see it go. Is there a point where you think, oh, I just love listening to my music up on the sun deck, or I love what I did in the most.
Really? You know, and it's funny because as I'm looking at getting a new one, it has to have like all these, a fabulous sun deck, an amazing jacuzzi. The upper deck experience has to be everything to keep things moving slowly. I mean, you have to have the dummies with the pulls for the instant drinks and everything. You know, we think of everything now. So, I mean, yeah, that's definitely one of my all-time favorite places to be and just spend an afternoon cruising and enjoying and eating. And I would actually say probably one of my other favorite places is having a magnificent dinner in the dining room, which is a private room, really broken apart from the rest of the boat. And it has floor to ceiling windows. So as you're being served the most amazing meal, you literally are just staring at the ocean. And I don't think there's anything better than that.
That's beautiful. And you know, the neon lights, the music, the kind of 90s style, it sounds like an amazing kind of party boat. Did you have to, when it became a family boat, did you have to make any kind of tweaks to make it more family friendly, or is it the exact same boat?
It's the exact same boat. That's the beauty of it. The way this boat is laid out, it's very much a family style boat. It's a gathering boat. So the main salon is very open and spacious, and it runs all the way down to like, I call it the breakfast nook area, which has a beautiful bar in it, a white onyx bar that I put in there. So, you know, it's very flowing. It's very open, tons of windows. You know, a lot of boats are very enclosing, and it's a turn off for me. It's in all like whites and creams. It's bright, it's airy, but it's at the same time extremely inviting, because we have these huge couch areas where everyone sits around and with the kids, we'll play games. You know, it's just really, really comfortable and inviting, very homey.
And, you know, you have this amazing boat and all these incredible businesses and you look very polished. What would your girlfriends from the Bahamas trips, what would they say? Ah, here's what she's really like. Like, oh, she's clumsy or she's forgetful or, you know, what do you get teased about?
Yeah, no. It's kind of like Vegas, you know, stays in the Bahamas. What happens in the Bahamas stays in the Bahamas. It's one of those, like, oh my God, this is a real her we haven't seen.
Okay.
You know, and literally jumping off the decks and just crazy fun stuff. So, I think they like me better there.
Okay, so there are fun times in the Bahamas that we can't talk about. Fair enough. Well, I guess my last question really is kind of what next? You know, you've got all these balls in the air, hopefully a new boat coming soon. Do you have any sort of travel plans? Do you have any plans to actively get out and see a boat? Or is that all on hold given what's going on?
I have been looking.
Already?
You know, it'll probably take me a little while like it did with this one even. You know, I'm the kind of person like when you walk in, you know, it's like the bones are good. Something about it just feels right. Course I have a list a mile long of things I bought on it.
Do you what's on your kind of hit list that you can say to yourself, you know what, if I have a boat that has this and this, I'm buying it?
You know, it's hard because like I said, I'm spoiled. So my master suite is massive, surrounded with complete glass, and it has a his and hers separate heads. And hers has a walk-in closet. I mean, it's all, with a big jacuzzi and big shower. And his has his own, you know, separate. I happen to love that. Nowadays, you see a lot of them are very combined. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a lot of touches to this particular boat that are probably going to be very hard to replace. And you know, it's just, I think the openness, the airiness of it, lots of windows, and the fact that it's not so sterile. It is very user-friendly for a family, but yet it's still very user-friendly to have the higher end beautiful. I mean, the woods on the inside and everything are beautiful as well. So having that transition where it could really be a family and a high-end party boat all in one, might be a little hard to find.
Okay. Well, any designers, builders listening, you can hear Carolyn is shopping. You can pitch her your ideas based on everything today, and hopefully you find your dream second match.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you so much, Carolyn.
I appreciate you having me, Charlotte.
Oh, thank you for coming. Thanks a lot.
My pleasure. Bye. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this week's Boat Briefing, which was mixed and produced by Ed Cavendish and is a production of Boat International Media. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we'll see you next week.